The Pat Kenny Show
with Aviva Insurance
on News Talk.
In 1949, China was under communist ruler Mao Zedong. During the Mao era, China suffered the Great Famine, where nearly 40 million people died, and the Cultural Revolution, so-called, happened. Yung Chang lived her childhood in fear along with many others, but thanks to her bravery, she became the first person to leave communist China in 1978. She told her story in a book called Wild Swans that sold 15 million copies worldwide, except, of course, in China, where it was banned. Now, that book was published in 1991, and I spoke to Yung Chang at the time of its publication. Out now is her new book, Fly, Wild Swans, a memoir which follows on from that last book. And this time she tells the story of what it was like to grow up in London after being so isolated from the rest of the world. Yung Chang, good morning and welcome.
Hello, good morning.
I wonder, could we go back to the publication of Wild Swans in 1991 and the story of yourself and your mother and your grandmother in China and how that book came about?
I came to Britain when I was 26 from a completely isolated China. In Britain I had my freedom. But in 1988, 10 years after I came to Britain, my mother came from China to stay with me. And for the first time, she told me the stories of her life, the story of my grandma, and herself. And when she started, she couldn't stop. She stayed with me for 6 months and she talked every day. And by the time she left Britain, she had left me 60 hours of tape recordings. So I then started writing Wild Swans, which was published in 1991.
Now,
30 years ago,
the life that you had and that your mother had and that your grandmother had really tell the story of China.
It does. I mean, our stories really reflect the sort of history of 20th century China, right from the beginning when China was still under the emperor, where my grandmother was born and her feet were crushed and bound to create these ghastly 3-inch golden lilies since she was 2 years old. And then on to through Mao's rule in China. It ends in 1978 when the Mao era ended and China began to open up. And I became one of the first people to come to the West.
Now, the extraordinary thing that young people will not realize how awful the so-called Cultural Revolution was in China. 40 million people died, and you have written that the Mao regime invented 120 different ways to torture people.
Yes. Well, yes, it was awful. Torture, violence, atrocities, denunciation meetings were all over China. It was a country perhaps where state-sponsored public violence and atrocities were the most widespread. It was a kind of unique phenomenon in the world.
And the idea of re-education, that you could have very highly qualified academics who'd be sent to a farm.
Oh, yes. I mean, that was the least of punishment because Mao had said the more books you read, the more stupid you become. And so all these people, intellectuals and writers, artists, teachers, doctors, they were deemed teachers. And these professions were deemed useless in a kind of this ghastly utopia state in the Cultural Revolution.
It's interesting, Yung Chang, that in recent days, Donald Trump has been saying, the intellectuals don't like me, he said, of himself.
Well, I'm afraid he has a lot in common. I mean, all these people who have totalitarian or dictator inclinations, they share a lot of similarities.
Now, your book was shocking, I suppose, to many people in the West to get the full implications of what Mao had been doing. But when the book was published, what was the reaction inside China, as far as you knew?
Well, when the book was published in the early 1990s, the book was banned in China. But I was still allowed to go into China because at that time, China was continuing with the reforms that had started in 1978. And because at that time, China wasn't so rich and powerful and felt it could throw its weight around, so it still needed Western goodwill in order for its economy to take off. So the atmosphere was rather relaxed, much more relaxed than it is today. And I was still able to go into China in the 1990s, whereas now it's impossible. And I can't be with my mother at her deathbed.
Of course, you have written many books since Wild Swans. But I want to refer to one person who will be of great interest to Irish listeners, and that is the love of your life, the man that you met. His name is John Halliday, and John was actually brought up in Dundalk.
He was. And it was most, I mean, that happened to be a great asset. Dundalk was a great asset to our work. It was because near Dundalk, in the village, when John was growing up, there was a Russian refugee who taught Russian in the village near John's where John was growing up. And so John learned great Russian, and that stood us in good stead in research in the Russian archives. The Russian archives were absolute treasure trove in Moscow, and because of his Russian, John's Russian, he was able to access a tremendous amount of archives and other documents. And so it was, I've been to Dundalk. I loved it. It was so beautiful. I mean, I love Ireland. I think the sort of idyllic country is so beautiful. And also people are so literary. I mean, my mother went to Ireland with me when Wild Swans came out. And when we were there, even taxi drivers could, knowledgeably discuss my book and quite knowledgeably discuss the book. My mother toured Ireland as well, and she was thrilled by the welcome, by the reaction of Irish readers. I mean, once she was almost in tears when she saw the queue outside the bookshop where we were signing Wild Swans. And once a taxi driver discussed with us about our lives. I mean, it was absolutely amazing and wonderful.
Now, you talk about John. When you met him, he had a full head of curly silver hair, and you later learned that this had been silver since the age of 3.
Yes, that's what he told me. Well, yes, I mean, yes, his curly hair, silver, wonderful. And in fact, when we were researching the biography of Mao in China, a Chinese writer specially wrote about that because, all the Chinese have black, brown hair, and they don't become white until they're old. And so this writer made a point of explaining to his readers, John has white hair not because he's old, because white men have white hair.
Now, you've written many books with John in the meantime, and his knowledge of Russia and Korea, very influential in those works. And also, as your boon companion traveling to China, a great asset, I'm sure. But when you watched as China seemed to open up to the world, were you optimistic that things would change and change utterly, even though the Communist Party was still at the helm?
Well, throughout the 1980s and 1990s, to some extent, I was optimistic. And of course, the country was still an oppressive country and is still regarded Mao as an icon. Mao's portrait was still on Tiananmen Square, his corpse lying in state in the center of Beijing. But I felt that the regimes then only propped up him in order to justify the communist monopoly of power. They really didn't have a genuine fondness for Mao, because they also suffered under Mao. But since Mr. Xi Jinping came to power in 2012, the situation has changed drastically. Although his father suffered appallingly in the Cultural Revolution, and he himself suffered in the Cultural Revolution, but he remained ardent Maoist. And what is more, he is determined to make China more like the bad old Mao's days, and was trying to drag China backward. Of course, he only achieved limited success, but the fact he's doing that is very worrying. Well, and also,
I was just going to ask you, why would he want to do this? I mean, we see China as the growing world economy. It is dominant in so many technologies. We look at what it builds infrastructurally in awe, such as the ability of Chinese engineers and scientists to do what they do. Why would he want to drag it backwards? And backwards to what?
Well, backwards to being emphatically a communist state with very tight control, harsh punishment for any dissent, and people not allowing to read much more straight, to read unauthorized books, to speak unauthorized thoughts, to have unauthorized contact with the outside world. So more repressive inside China. And the other most important thing is to regard the West as an enemy. When the reform started in 1978, when I first got out of China, I mean, the most important thing that underlining the reforms, it was to become friends with the West. It was at Xi's time that this fundamental thing changed. China has been turning the West from friends to foe. So I think, to me, that's the most worrying thing. And to see Xi set up a sort of a camp with people like Putin and North Korean's dictator and Iran is the most worrying thing. And I think that is the test for China that is becoming more open and liberal and more and a better place to live. And China going to become a more horrible state.
Now, you have a chapter at the end of your book, Why I Can't Go to My Mother's Deathbed. and this is written over the period, describes the period from 2014 to 2024. When you were in China the last time, you were afraid you could actually be trapped there.
Yes. Well, when I was in China last time in 2018, and President Xi had just made himself the supreme permanent leader of China. And one of the orders he gave after this happened was to make, I quote, slandering or insulting revolutionary heroes a crime punishable by imprisonment. And that really struck fear into my heart in a way that I hadn't felt for the past 40 years until that moment. And also especially for me, who is a biographer of Mao, who had documented Mao's misrule of China. And I felt that when I was, if I set foot in the country, I could sort of well be thrown into prison. And even though I'm a British citizen, but you see the Hong Kongers who are British citizens were imprisoned, are still imprisoned in Hong Kong. And I also felt that the West could no longer protect me because China couldn't care less what the West says now. Whereas when my Mao biography with John Halliday was published in 2005, when the regime tried to ban me from going into China, Britain at that time was still able to negotiate with Beijing and secured a trip to China like almost every year to see my mother. But of course, I was like in a bubble, in a small mini prison, and I was only able to see my mother. But at least for about 10 years, more than 10 years, I was able to see my mother. But now I feel that my problem is if I get into China, I might not be allowed out.
You make the remark, if Britain couldn't protect Hong Kong, how could they protect you?
Yes. Well, yes, that's when I watched, you know, the Hong Kongers protest or, you know, desires to express themselves in this massive, you know, demonstrations, and Beijing couldn't care less to basically took over Hong Kong, something that was actually against their interest because they still need Hong Kong to make lots of money for them. And also they get very bad press in the West. But Mr. Xi doesn't care. He'd rather suffer economic losses and be very unpopular, and he will have his way, which is a more repressive, certainly much more repressive way than ever since Mao's death, which was Mao's way. I mean, he couldn't get to that extent in Mao's days, because China is still open now. It has a contact with the West. He couldn't isolate it. He can't isolate it. He can't terrorize the whole society like Mao did. And so he can't achieve Mao's type of tyranny, but it's a variation of Mao's tyranny.
Mm. The question, though, and you raised those points there about Chinese people being more accessible to the West and vice versa. I mean, many Chinese people come to Ireland as tourists and they enjoy the experience. They travel all over Europe. In fact, in any European city these days, you see hundreds, if not thousands, of Chinese tourists enjoying what the West has to offer. It's almost impossible to think of China going backwards to being a closed society with, limited contact with the West.
Not entirely going back, but certainly a much less liberal country today's China is compared to before Xi came to power.
Well, the book, the latest book, is called Fly, Wild Swans, subtitled My Mother, Myself and China. It's published by William Collins and its author, Yung Chang. Once again, it's very nice to talk to you again after so many years.
Okay, thank you very much. I enjoyed it. Enjoyed our conversation.
The Pat Kenny Show
with Aviva Insurance
on News Talk.